Congresswoman Hanabusa, thank you so much for speaking with Voice of America.
Thank you for inviting me.
The North Korean nuclear crisis is one of the biggest security challenges facing the United States right now. It is a particular important concern for Hawaii due to its proximity to North Korea. Mm-hmm. Despite sanctions and international pressures, North Korea continues to test its missiles and develop nuclear weapons. As a member of the House Armed Services Committee, what is your view that what is the best strategy to handle this crisis?
The most important part that we have to recognize is that no one quite understands what the purpose of what Kim Jong-un is doing. And as a result of it, that it's the unknown and it's the unpredictability factor that causes the most angst for everyone. Having said that, everyone is under the impression that Hawaii is the closest, basically part of the United States, not the territories, but the United States itself, one of the 50th states, that's the closest to North Korea. In actuality, we are not. Alaska's closer, and in some projections, Seattle, Washington, for example, is 500 miles closer to North Korea than we are. So the best strategy that the Defense Department has probably come up with is that the first thing we need to do for the security of Hawaii, and then it takes care of because we're the first, we believe we're the first line of defense, mm-hmm. is a radar system. So that is what is first on our agenda, and we also want to see that the missile defense is really boosted in Alaska. Mm-hmm. Because believe it or not, Alaska actually gives Hawaii the best coverage, as well as our allies along the Pacific Rim.
You sit on the Sea Power and Projection Forces Subcommittee.
That's right.
Many members are very concerned about China's activities in the South China Sea in mm-hmm. recent years. What is your view on China's island-building activities, and do you think that the United States should take more action to counter this behavior?
Well, as you know, there is some people call it the cow's tongue, and some people call it the nine dotted lines, which is the expansion area as far as China is concerned in the South China Sea. I remember hearing once the president of Vietnam speak, who said, "The first thing you Americans can do is stop calling it the South China Sea. You can call it the East Vietnam Sea or the West or the West Vietnam Sea, or you can call it the West Philippine Sea, but you shouldn't call it the South China Sea because it's like a concession to China as to the name." Having said that, however, the United States is committed to the protection of the area, and it's important to note that the policy of the United States, as far as the naval forces is concerned, is that we are building, and that's what you see in the upcoming National Defense Authorization Act and the appropriations measures, so that there is supposed to be, and there will be shortly, a shift of about 60% of our sea forces into the Pacific area. Asia Pacific, people may not remember this, but what President Obama said in 2011 is, you know, the 21st century will be defined by Asia Pacific, whether we live in conflict or we live in cooperation. And of course, for us, then Secretary of State Hillary Clinton said, and let's not forget, the gateway to Asia Pacific for the United States is Hawaii. So Hawaii plays a critical role. And as you know, we are the home base for what we call the Pacific Command, PACOM.
Yeah.
And PACOM, for the United States Defense Department, is 55% of the Earth's surface.
Yeah.
And as I like to tell people, it also includes the three greatest economies of the world, and the fourth rising being India. But you know, when you really think about the focus, that's why the United States is not going to simply sit back. Mm-hmm. And we are going to put the investment, especially in the sea forces. Mm-hmm. So we will never, the United States will never give up its posture mm-hmm. in the Asia Pacific region.
Coming from Hawaii, we all know that the beautiful landscape of Hawaii, and you represent the first district of Hawaii, and you've been a longtime advocate for environmental protection. Mm-hmm. And one of the biggest decisions by President Trump is to pulling out of the Paris Climate Agreement. What does this mean for the environmental protection effort in the United States?
Well, you know, I think that under President Obama, so much of the quote, the renewable energy type or the green economy of efforts have already taken place. And what I found to be very satisfying is the fact that the big corporations are pushing back on President Trump and saying, well, we don't necessarily agree with what your position is, because I think that everyone realizes that the energy and the issues of energy in terms of oil, fossil fuels, has always been a major concern, and some have always believed that that's the reason why the United States gets involved in the Middle East and gets involved in a lot of these issues that lead us to conflicts that we don't necessarily want to be in. So the idea was, if we came up with a renewable energy source, then that would prevent that type of hold a sense that we must protect those kinds of investments. So the pulling out what I call the Paris Accord is very short-sighted. So I think that we will continue, and those of us who are in Congress will continue to protect those efforts, like the Environmental Protection Agency, and the efforts like the military, for example. A lot of people may not know this, but the Navy is continuing on the path that President Obama had put them on, which is that by the year 2020, they will be 50% off the reliability of fossil fuel, basically. So they will be self-sustained, 50%. In Hawaii, we have a Marine Corps air base there, and they're almost 100% off already, off of the grid, so to speak. So those efforts will continue. And the development of alternative energy sources will also continue. So irrespective of what the president has said, I believe that the nation has already they're on the training wheels, and they're getting used to this kind of a focus. And I think they realize the merits of it, and they will continue.
A lot of analysts said that since China, United States will not be leading the fight against climate change, China may step in and take leadership role in this area. Do you have this concern, and what does it mean for the U.S.?
Well, I don't think it's a concern. I think that, it would take the great powers, and China is a formidable power, and the United States. I mean, even if the United States may have pulled out by the acts of the president, it doesn't mean that the United States has never been concerned about it or hasn't done things on their own initiative. Remember, it was former Vice President Al Gore who really put the whole focus on these issues. And we've had historically, right, the Kyoto Protocol, as they call it, and China and the United States were not signatories to that. So, but the United States still led the way. I think it's very good if China takes a lead, because China's got those issues to contend with. I have not been to Beijing, but the people who have told me how, you can't breathe, your eyes get watery, and I said, my God, that sounds like Los Angeles about 50 years ago. Yeah. And that's what caused the change in our laws on air quality. So if China steps up, great, because that can only mean that the climate will be better throughout the world, and the recognition, and it also shows President Trump, as well as some of my Republican colleagues, that China believes that there's a problem with global warming and there's a climate change going on. They have a difficulty sometimes in even saying the words climate change. So I think that that's a good thing. It isn't like a race to who's got better missiles, or it's really for the people of the world to benefit.
You have been a critic of a lot of President Trump's policies. What are the policies that affect your constituency the most, and also especially Asian American communities?
I think that where we see it the most is his treatment of minorities. The Muslim ban, for example, and his role and his very critical stance on immigration and not willing to recognize that, you know, we have people who have contributed so much who are undocumented, and we have what we call the dreamers, those who are here really not necessarily because they wanted to be, but they were children brought by their parents, and they are undocumented. And so he's not even willing to make those kinds of exceptions and to give them a pathway to citizenship. And we do know Asian groups like the Filipinos have had a constant battle. We have still yet to fulfill our obligation to the Filipino World War II veterans. And with President Trump's policies, everyone just sees any hope just disappearing. I think the other issue is that our Asian communities have always been very, very interested in developing economic relationships with the countries. And the problem that I foresee with his policies is that we're not quite sure whether President Trump is going to be an isolationist, mm-hmm. or whether he's going to actually impede mm-hmm. trade and that kind of a situation with others. His position on the TPP, for example, people were taken aback completely by that he would actually pull out of that agreement. For Hawaii, what is very clear in the types of legislation that he's proposing, or actually more in terms of repealing and not funding, is that our native Hawaiians, our host culture in Hawaii, mm-hmm. are going to be, as we say, zeroed out mm-hmm. on many of their major programs, education, housing. And so for the people at home, it's very difficult for them to understand why the president would not continue with the relationships that the federal government has had with our Native Hawaiian population.
Lastly, is there any message that you would like to send to our audience in China and also VOA's worldwide audience?
I think that what everyone needs to understand is that the amazing part of the United States is someone like myself, right? I am a fourth generation Japanese American, and before coming to Congress, I was the president of the Hawaii State Senate, and I'm the first woman to do that in Hawaii, and I'm the first Asian woman in the United States to lead either chamber of any state legislature. So what I would like people to know is that the United States has, we may have problems like every place else, but I think it's the only country where you would be able to see someone like me, an Asian American, fourth generation, that my great-grandparents who immigrated would be able to sit back and say, wow, she's actually a member of the Congress of the United States, or she was actually Senate President from our state. And this is what is very important. I also think that the women aspect is something that I would like to tell the audiences, is that, you know, we have difficulties. Women have difficult choices, and they have major sacrifices that they make along the way. Notwithstanding, you know, we are changing, and they must all do their part, and they must not be afraid to step forward to do their part. And, you know, in the Chinese culture, because, you know, we have... the Chinese were the first Asian immigrants to Hawaii, and you know, it's they've always been very strong in terms of the holding of the family together, and I think that I would like to see the women recognize that role again. It's very important to me that people step forward, not be held back because of our race or our ethnicity, and also our gender, and to move forward.
Thank you so much, Congresswoman
Hanabusa,
so much for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you.